Hello and welcome. This is a special Dawn of War 2 themed installment of GFW Radio. I'm here with
Robert Ashley,
aka Bobito,
aka Max Chill, otherwise known like. I don't, anyway,
do you have another alias?
Probably.
Okay. I called you Judge Ito now. Bobito turned into Judge Ito.
Judge Ito. that's
Chinese
whisper.
Timely.
One man Chinese whispers.
Significantly less cool.
And then we have
Sean Malloy.
Okay.
Hi there.
So
no Jeff.
Are we going to pretend that Ryan's here?
Ordinarily, we would have just included this Dawn of War 2 talk on the podcast that went up on when since we're recording here on Wednesday.
June 4th.
Some place in time.
Wednesday, June 4th.
Lost Island screwed up my whole sense of chronology. But since that's the embargo lifts for the game today when you're listening to this podcast, so we rather than make you wait till next week, we decided we'll sit in and talk about it in advance. And that way we can just, you know, put it online for you along with the interview and the preview so that you can check it out in a timely fashion.
Yeah, it's a supplement. It's cool.
So for this, I went up to Vancouver where Relic Studios is based, and this is, of course, a sequel to their Warhammer 40,000 themed real-time strategy game. The original game did really well, had a ton of expansions for it and stuff. It's also the same studio that produced Company Heroes, which you hear me talking about all the time. So this was my interest in it. I'm not like a big Warhammer, you know, universe fan, or I haven't been. But what happened is, like, I fell in love with Company Heroes to such an extent that, you know, I talk about on the podcast week after week, play it on a nightly basis, still continue to do so. And I was like, okay, now I have a point of reference with what the studio does, and I'm convinced that they make quality games in this genre, so I wanted to see it. And I went up there, and it was kind of fun looking at it both ways. And so my expectations were that as Company Heroes player, I'd see this and be like, okay, I'm gonna understand, you know, how this game is structured, how you know the whole thing is organized, and I did, and it made me super interested in that capacity. It's like, okay, it doesn't matter. The opposite of people who are like, I don't want to play Company Heroes because it's World War II, and I'm into World War II, so I was like, well, that's natural. I'm not the person who's like, I don't want to play Dawn of War because it's Warhammer, but I'm kind of like, well, Warhammer, like, prove to me why that's cool.
Right. You
know? Can I ask a stupid question? What even is Warhammer? I have no idea. Like, what is the theme of it? Is it like
a British company?
Fantasy, like...
Yeah, a British company called Games Workshop produced this. This is like in the post Gary Gygax Dungeons and Dragons world, a tabletop fantasy game that had most of the same themes as Dungeons and Dragons, but actually uses miniature environments and lead figurines that people will often paint. And so those will represent their whole armies and stuff. And so again, instead of, you know, in World War, I mean, I guess it's not a fair comparison again because Dungeons and Dragons, you play a single role. This, you command an entire army or something. So it's kind of like an RTS with miniatures, you know, and turn-based stuff. So you'd say, like, I have a bunch of, you know, riflemen here, or guys with bolt throwers. I'm going to move them forward and we'll roll the die and see how they fare against this group of orcs with flamethrowers.
Very complicated hobby board game, basically.
Yeah. Now that you say that, I think I knew a girl in D.C. who was obsessively into painting those things and had a glass case full of them, plus, you know, various dragons.
Yeah.
Right.
And the difference between dragons.
So the difference between Warhammer and Warhammer 40K is Warhammer's the more traditional, like, Tolkien-esque elves and medieval kind of stuff, and then 40K takes a lot of those medieval kind of fantasy orc elements and throws them in
future?
Space armor. Yes.
Oh,
exactly.
Oh man, it's like
orcs
the continuum of video gaming.
Yeah, orcs
fantasy
in space
and sci-fi. Like, where does it fall?
There is the walls are blurry.
Yes. Okay,
kind of like the Final Fantasy games did, right? I mean, the original Final Fantasies were more or less traditional.
Yeah, they were a little more fantasy, grounded, right? In terms of like fantasy, and then later they got crazy with the sci-fi elements.
Technology came in. So there's still magic. So, like, there's a race called the Eldar, and those are the equivalent of space elves. They'll have, like, the sorts of same attributes you'd associate with elves. They're good at distance combat. They're quick and that sort of thing. Robert's laughing. Yeah, I did some research for
space
this,
elves,
man.
Come on.
It was part of my research.
Okay, man. I believe you. Something about it.
Come on, space elves. So... what is there to say about this game? So from my point of view as a Company Heroes fan, all the expectations I just outlined, it absolutely nailed it. I looked at it and said, wow, I cannot wait to play this game. We have Ryan Scott who's about to join us here. This
Ryan
is...
Scott coming through the door.
Put your headset on, Ryan. It'll be fine.
Come through.
We're talking Ryan about Scott Dawn of War in a special segment.
Say whatever you want about him before editor. He puts his headphones on.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Ryan.
Hello, and welcome to GFW Radio.
You're in Jeff's
special
seat.
Segment. Special segment.
We're taping that next, man.
Oh.
This is supposed to be more or less a straight-up Dawn of War discussion to supplement a feature, but it's already turned into mini GFW, so that's totally
forget
fine.
I said anything.
That's good.
Okay.
So I was explaining, beating around the bush, working up to my impressions of seeing Dawn of War 2. I didn't actually get to play it. But here's the main thrust of it. They have three main things that they wanted to address, and one is that in traditional RTS games, a lot of people say that they feel disconnected to their units, that they feel like, they're pushing army men around on the board. And this was some of the same, thought process that governed their creation of Company Heroes. Like, we don't want these to be toy soldiers. We want these to at least to seem lifelike in that if a mortar goes off near them, they're going to dive for cover. They're going to go, they're going to fire back when someone's firing at them. You're going to see them reload. You're going to hear them scream and actually get shot. The things that we're used to seeing in a first-person, shooter or something like that, or any other, even third-person action games, but just traditionally not in the really static RTS space. So that was the step. Part of the way that they answered this with Company Heroes is animation and audio and all this. And now they want to take it a step further and more or less drastically reduce the number of units you're controlling at any time. So rather than feeling overwhelmed, building a base here, controlling an army of this type of units, maybe it's mixed over here, fighting on another front at the same time and trying to manage all of this, and then at the same time go in, zoom in at any given spot and give specific orders to one unit or something, which is called microing. This is micromanagement in the RTS space, and it's usually a dirty word. It's looked as like it's the last thing you want to do, but it's also what separates good players from bad. So for example, in StarCraft, they're really good players. They combine these two modes of thinking, strategy and tactics, seamlessly into one. So you might not, they'd have to vocalize what they're actually doing. Otherwise, you wouldn't understand. I'm kind of talking to Robert here because you watched me play Company Heroes for a minute and you seemed to be like perplexed by what the fuck was happening and how I was doing this. So they would be saying, in 10 minutes from now, I need to have this type of weapon to counter the inevitable fact that they're going to bring this kind of unit against me. If I don't have it, I'm going to be screwed. So they're going to be working that out. But then maybe there's a fight over here, and they're like, I can dodge these guys' attacks by moving this unit around them. But every second you spend diddling with that one unit is one that you're sacrificing bigger, broader strokes,
Yeah.
One of your pinchers or your pincher movements falling behind, any of these things. So
to me, it's like watching a movie by flipping the channels. You're like making your own little movie. Have you ever done that, sitting on TV and just watch TV and just flip the channels and just see what happens if you just consider it all one thing? Like, you just hear all the different speech. So like, come on down to Pontiac. I love you.
I have never done that.
Creative excuse for channel surfing. Yeah. Meta narrative.
Making my own movie.
But it's sort of like that. I mean, you're just sort of flipping around, and all this crazy shit's happening. When I was watching you play that game, though, I just wondered, what someone who's like 80 years old would think.
Right. I don't think
it
would.
Just looks
unless
so
they're
incomprehensibly
used to,
insane
to a life of like war gaming.
Yeah.
Even in the oldest type of war games around, they would. And even when you see, in all the movies, you see generals pushing Napoleon, pushing his little lead figures around with a stick. I think they'd grasp that, but in this case, it's that the lead figure would also be something to worry about, too. Instead of worrying about the fact that these troops are over here and that they're provisioned and well-armed, you also have to worry about what this specific guy is doing at this specific moment. And that's the weird thing. So it's like the channel surfing or just like having a macrocosmic and a microcosmic view at the same time. So what Relic wants to do with Dawn of War 2 is really take that out so it's a more manageable five squads that you're controlling at any time, which brings it in a way closer to something like Brothers in Arms, where you got two squads and yourself, where you kind of act like this go-between for them. And that frees you up from having – you're not building bases, you're not collecting resources, you're not worrying about any of these other logistical things. You're just focusing on the tactics of these units. So say, for example – you have a bunch of guys with long-range rifles or automatic rifles, and they're perfect for suppressing other units. If they come at you directly and you're behind fire, you light them up, and they're going to be either stuck crawling around on the ground or have to get to cover and sit there and wait. If they're exchanging fire, then you might say bring up another squad that's got grenades and flamethrowers, and then you could flush them out of their cover with that. Even though, like, if you brought another rifle squad, you might not be able to do much because they're hidden. So then you multiply that on a level 5, where you can either have 5 squads and an addition of other units, you know, big heroic things like they call it a juggernaut, dreadnought.
I think it's
a juggernaut. I'm looking to someone. Hopefully,
the
someone knows dread. Warhammer better than me.
Warhammer, the dreadnought.
And I looked that up, and the way that works is, I guess, like when one of the Space Marines, which are kind of like the equivalent of the humans in the Warhammer 40,000 universe, when one of those dies, they'll like sort of put their ghost in the shell of this mech warrior type thing. And then they'll and they'll live
Robert,
on.
Robert liked that. So wait a minute. Back up a bit. How are you deciding what units you have? Do you get to pick, or is it like you're dealt a hand of 10 and you pick 5 or something and you just drop them in wherever, since there's no resources or base building?
So let me specify first that we're talking about just the campaign here.
Oh,
I think it's safe to divide these two, because they haven't showed the multiplayer, and I have no idea. I'm guessing it will involve some rudimentary structures and management, you know, maybe like Company Heroes does.
Right, because what you're describing so far sounds kind of like Myth. Are you familiar with the Bungie game? Where
I
it was a real-time tactics game. It didn't have the base building that like a Warcraft or like a Command & Conquer did. It was kind of like you are given a certain amount of units, you drop them on the battlefield, and you go.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of what this is?
It seems like that's the deal, yeah, with the flexibility that like maybe for subsequent missions. I'm sure for the first ones, they will determine in advance what you're going to field. Mm-hmm. And that way they're able to teach you how to use them. Like I was saying, this is a unit that's good for suppression. This is one that's good for flanking. This is one that's good for hand-to-hand combat. This is one that's good for mobility. And then later on, what happens is that you can choose the specific squads that you're going to field. And then not only that, you can manipulate their loadouts and stuff. So here's the other thing. They want to address the... And I want to get through this. This is their point-by-point thing. You'll see this in a lot of the previews, because what I'm talking about right now is their presentation. So what I try to do in the interview, and I'll give you my impressions afterwards, go beyond that. But to get through this really quick then, is that there's no persistence or permanence in a lot of RTS play. What will happen is you do one campaign mission, you build up this base, you start with just some peons, you work your way toward this massive army, annihilate the enemy, then you hit a load screen and you do it all over again. You start with those same peons, you build the bases once again. So by dumping that, you know, that's one solution. The other is that to keep you playing with the usual carrot that every game of almost every genre is turning to more and more now, you know, where Call of Duty 4 will let you unlock weapons, Battlefield Heroes lets you get things, you know, Battlefield Bad Company, which I just reviewed, has got its system, you know, its selection of equipment and gadgets and weapons that you unlock. So here, similarly, you get different armor and guns, color schemes, banners, and all these things that you outfit your squads with, and that will actually change, you know, their capabilities and stuff. So before you go in, you can change their loadouts, and I'm going to put this kind of unit here, or I'm going to give the best armor to the flankers that are also hand-to-hand specialists that use chain swords. That's for you to laugh at, Robert.
What's so funny about a chain sword?
It's just something for you to laugh at, man.
Is that like a chainsaw and a sword? Is that
it's a sword with a chainsaw. So if you think of a lightsaber, it's just like it's a chainsaw lightsaber.
Okay.
So you're
doling out all this equipment to your dudes.
Yeah, and then from there they say is that, you know, there's meaning and persistence to the campaign, so that they want you to, under each squad leader of one of these 5 squads you have, has got his own voice actors, his own characteristics, and they try to, you know, create some personality to go with it. So you feel like if these guys die or they're pinned or something, you get over the whole, I'm the general, these are my, like, plastic figurines I'm pushing across the board, who the hell cares if 10 die here as long as I take this territory in the long run, where you're more invested in their survival and stuff. And that all seems really cool. In action, it's really cool. I mean, that's the thing that translates so well, is that, you know, when you're zooming in, or even, you know, at the standard camera that you're in, you never really have to go across this giant map and worry about a ton of stuff in the campaign. I mean, you might move about a half screen in any given direction, up, down, left, right, or something, and you still have your stuff going. So that means you're relatively closer to it. And they'll come in and they'll, you know, if they chainsaw someone, it's very much like, you know, Gears of War or something, where it's all animated, it all works out, and the way the grenades fly and set people on fire, and the way that, you know, tracer fire is going off and ricocheting, buildings blowing up, they have like one section I saw was super cool on just the tech side, but it matters in this kind of game because part of the fun of Company Heroes is, you know, when all the artillery is going off and stuff and you're seeing the earth flying and the buildings coming down. I mean, there's something to be said for that. And here they'll have things like an orbital laser where, you know, there was like 40 of these orcs on screen, you know, charging your Marines, and then all of a sudden, you know, the ground lights up around them, and then they're lifted off the ground and suspended without gravity for a second, and then the orbital laser comes down and just blows them away, and then it sends like all 40 of them, you know, ragdolling across the environment, and if they hit, you know, if they hit a tree or whatever, not a tree in this world, but if they hit, you know, some you know, column or something like that, they can knock that over, and that looked really cool. The bigger units start fighting, and they do hand to hand. You know, they showed one of the squad commanders, they call the force commander, jumping on like this orc war boss. Beat him with his war hammer over the head, you know, knocking him all around, and that looked really cool. And so as a Company Heroes player, where the things that matter most there are suppression and cover, you're now adding this significant melee thing, and originally they had planned for this to be part of Company Heroes, and that would have been cool. I mean, the whole notion of fixing bayonets, this other element of play, so that if you have guys that are entrenched or something and they're shooting, if you're able to flank him, you just jump down in their trenches and, you know, fix your bayonets and stab them to death. And now they've got all that going in this game. And I think that adds a lot. So to go back from the other point of view, I was like, well, what about if you're just a Dawn of War player and you skip Company Heroes because you're not into World War II themes and whatnot? Then I think that people's minds are probably going to be really blown because the game is so much closer to Company Heroes than the original Dawn of War, as far as I can tell. All the leaps that were there in Company Heroes will just be brand new to them. So it's like, not only am I getting, you know, these cool effects like I'm talking about with orbital lasers and stuff, but just the audio, the animation and all that. And the audio stuff I talk about is cool because it's not so specific that an enemy will recognize that you outfitted your squad with this kind of weapon and will respond, and we'll talk about that. But it's context sensitive in the way that they're AI audio works. I mean, their audio AI works is that, like, say, for example, if you're crossing a bridge or something and it's been mined, one of your guys might kind of hesitate and say, like, I don't know, you know, should we really cross this or should we send the guys with the jetpacks over? So if the bridge does blow up, they can at least boost off of it or something. And it'll cue into that kind of stuff. And it works so well in Company Heroes, and it actually matters here. Normally, I wouldn't even think about talking about audio in an RTS because I think about, like, I mean, Sean, you played a ton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I talked about Universe at War before, and I played that, the audio, it's like, it just kills it for me. You click on a unit, it says the same dumb line every time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of an old tradition, is you click on it and it's got its litany of different lines that it says.
Right.
Or the same line.
Or the same line. Yeah.
Yeah.
depending on the game.
The combination of things coming together, that the script is good, that the performer who's reading the lines is competent, and then also that the audio AI is splicing these in at the appropriate times, other than just when you click on a unit. And that goes back to, you know, Warcraft and the Ready Master. I'm not ready.
Mm-hmm.
Click on the ogres.
I mean, it sounds like it's getting just closer and closer to that sort of a childhood fantasy of you know, toy soldiers and battles that you'd have in your head, you know, out in the backyard, and the things that you would imagine happening that weren't actually happening. That you've got these huge battle scenes where lots of crazy stuff is happening, and it's still a game, but that it's just a lot more like physical, visceral.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, in the sense that, like, if you know, when you looked at when you first watched Star Wars and they had the 3D hologram chess thing, and you're looking at it and you're like, that kind of like was a look into the future for games like Tekken and Soul Calibur. Take aside the chess component, you're like, whoa, what if there were just like 3D muscle men that could beat on each other? And you got that. And this is kind of like the version where you're like, yeah,
Star Wars,
I have
Clay
all
Fighter,
my army stuff, and then now I get all of that going. And that's the cool thing, because in like an FPS or something, their hands are tied to the extent that you're just controlling one character or giving very rudimentary orders to squad mates or something. A lot of games don't even really want you to do that outside of, you know, like Brothers in Arms and Rainbow Six and stuff. And so when you do have battle, and that's kind of like this thing with games in that genre, right? Like Gears of War 2. They're like, now it's war. I mean, you hear that a lot. Like, before it was just these skirmishes, these battles. Now we want to show war. But when they go to resolve that, and it's no fault of their own, what it often boils down to is having a bunch of scripted stuff happening around you in the background that has no bearing on what you're doing. And this is the kind of game where if you're interested in RTS, but you're like, you don't really get it, I'm trying to give you reasons for liking it. You know, it's like,
it is
the entire war, but you are in control of it, you know, and the whole thing matters in the way that you're organizing it. So, I mean, to wrap it up on this, I was really, really impressed. I can't wait to play it. Again, this is, I mean, just about every bit of excitement I've had for Company Heroes, you know, over the past, you know, year or something, like, seems like it's perfectly going to translate into this game.
So they were showing you the single-player campaign, you said, right? So did they just show you, like, one faction, or do we know how many factions there are going to be, and are you going to have, multiple branches? Or?
Yeah, they showed the Space Marines. We know offhand that they're going to be two, the Orcs and the Space Marines. They didn't show the Orcs other than as an opponent, and they seemingly fight differently. And I don't know if that'll be that way for their single-player campaign as well, because they're just, a lot of times they had numerical superiority, but they just had less efficient forces to go up against the fewer Marines, which are kind of like the Navy, I mean, the Space Marines, which is like a Navy SEAL or something like that, you know?
Right, yeah.
In there to get the job done. So I don't know how they'll resolve that. They're also kind of like beating around the bush about other, I mean, right now, Company Heroes came out with two armies, just as many games come out with three.
Right.
So they keep joking around. There's this group called the Tyranids in Warhammer 40K lore. And I kind of,
like,
I don't know.
40 it's, different groups. I think
what I'm getting from them, they haven't said it, but my just cold reading on what they're saying says that they're probably going to be in it. Again, that's me speculating. This isn't
right. Well, they by Soulstorm, the third expansion for Dawn of War 1, they were up to 9 or something factions.
And
so
I think
we know there's plenty to draw on.
I haven't even played them, so again, seems ridiculous.
Yeah, Jeff's not here; he could speak to that.
But. Just because. I mean, like, how do you... It's so difficult to balance these games. For multiplayer is what I'm thinking of. Campaign content, that's no problem at all. But, like, when you're having a multiplayer game, and say you have an 8-player game going, and every one is a different army, and you have to worry about how you're combining these two, and, like, whether or not you're getting, like, overpowered, you know, combinations that you hadn't even anticipated. What happens when, this army's got this unit, and it's powerful in this context, but then it's limited by the fact that the army lacks other units. But then when they overlap with other combinations, and they're like, oh, you have no weakness now, you know.
It turns into like rock, paper, scissors, wood, fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Water, whatever.
I assume there's some degree of giving up on balance at that point.
Right.
Like, okay, well, there's some balance in some parts, but...
I want to play the RTS where it has no strategy at all. It's just like you have a headset on, and whoever can yell at their army best or like loudest wins. You're just like,
danger that
kill, 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 and they just
make a good
WarioWare
game.
There's the danger that Endwar by Ubisoft could have some of that to it. Because, I mean, this is an RTS that's controlled by, you know, voice input.
Yeah. Like, whoever is more palpably angry wins. Like, maybe they should have, like, something that reads your heart rate.
I don't think it would be hard because, you know, like when we play these games in Vent, like, it's just us screaming at units and stuff, just fucking blowing our gaskets. Kind of like, I guess, like a real squad leader would, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to tell people to stop doing something you think is not conducive to their survival, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
And cursing a blue streak.
A few other things about the game. Yeah, they keep saying that, like, you know, every decision you make, the order that you tackle missions in, so you'll be looking at a solar system or something with different planets, and you can jump and respond to different distress calls and go to these different missions. And they're trying to say that how you fight in each of these and is going to influence what happens later, and that the game's total outcomes will reflect, you know, your the order of your progress and stuff. And when I ask if
500 different endings, like Fallout 3.
Or like the skeptical, you know, thing would be like, what do you mean that you just pick up different, you unlock different weapons?
Right. It could very well be that.
And they're saying, no, it's not that, but they're not saying how.
Right.
So it's kind of like, well, until they say how, it's not even really worth, to me, it's just a claim, you know?
Yeah.
And we'll see what they do about that. Any other questions?
None. None at all.
Warhammer incurious crowd.
There's somebody listening right now that's like, God, but what about the...
Yeah, I mean, too bad Jeff's not here. As the Warhammer player.
Ryan played, but you're being really quiet. Didn't you play Dawn of War?
Huh, yeah.
Oh.
I'm just being really quiet because I, like, walked in midway.
That's fine, man. You should have the questions, right? What would you have wanted to know had you gone up there, and I might have answers for you.
Can you play as the Space Marines?
All right.
Thanks, Ryan.
Well, no. Well, I think you probably kind of talked about all the stuff that I'm curious about, sort of like where it kind of evolved from Company of Heroes, since that was that itself was an evolution of Dawn of War.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume this is going to be the next big thing that, you know, will take people like you away from Company of Heroes.
Right.
Well, I'm hoping.
I'm sure it will, yeah.
Sounds different enough if it's, like, no base building and stuff like that. That sounds like some people will not want to move to that. Just
right.
By its own
but again,
nature.
We don't know about multiplayer.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
it could
yeah,
get
yeah,
tricky
yeah,
because I don't... I mean, yeah, like, if you just described right now and you're like, oh, yeah, multiplayer, you just pick five squads and you go to war, like, okay, I'll stick with Company Heroes.
Yeah.
Until I play it and I'm proven different. But I really
it's interesting
don't
that
think
they
that's going to be the case at
didn't
all.
Didn't talk just, about multiplayer at all first because that seems like such the, like, a draw for this.
You think so? What I get from talking to them is that probably more people play, if it's not a 50-50 split, probably more people play the campaigns on these games.
I personally always play the campaigns and barely touch multiplayer unless I have a very specific friend group.
Right.
I'm the exact opposite.
I have loaded up Company of Heroes like nearly every other week once and tried to play. I'll play like one mission in the campaign and be like, okay, right. I'm gonna go play something else.
Campaigns can be pretty.
I keep trying to like make myself learn that game, but and I've even like downloaded videos and stuff. I'm like, I've got to figure this game out, and I just get bored and start playing Pac-Man.
This is a real problem with this kind of game, right? I mean, yeah. I'm with you in that, like, as you know, right now I can unequivocally say that Company Heroes is my favorite game, you know, of this past you know year, and I haven't finished the campaign on it or Opposing Fronts.
Yeah,
I like the multiplayer, the strength.
But
of
how did you figure out
like
the multiplayer stuff?
You know?
Like, how did you figure out the multiplayer stuff without doing the campaign? I mean,
by jumping in, what I was just about to recommend to you is that you get a teacher. You got to get a battle buddy.
Get a battle
and,
buddy.
Like, seriously, we can go in and we can play against the computer set to easy at first.
Yeah,
and you just learn there because there is like, it's kind of troubling that the correlation between the way that you handle single player and multiplayer is nowhere near as strong as I think it could be, at least if your goal is to condition people to move to graduate to multiplayer.
Yeah.
But maybe some people don't. I mean, it's kind of hard to say. Maybe they're like, well, a lot of people just aren't interested in multiplayer, but maybe they're not interested because they're having the experience you are in single player, and they're assuming like, well, if I can't beat the first couple of missions of campaign and feel competent about it, at least when I do beat it.
Yeah.
Like, well, good God, if I go online, I'm going to get screwed, you know?
I haven't really had trouble beating the campaign stuff I've done. I just have found it really boring. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, because they don't, it's not nearly the amount of options that are available to you in the multiplayer.
They
game.
Usually and ramp it up slowly. Like, the last mission in a typical single player campaign, that's where you get almost everything you would have in a multiplayer, and sometimes not even the full. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was feeling to me like an extension of the tutorial, which was another thing that I did that was really funny to me. I mean, it took like an hour and a half to get through the tutorial.
Because you wanted to, like, catch everything.
Yeah. I just slowly played through everything. I listened to everything. I mean, the tutorial was literally just that long. And I remember my wife's there. It was hanging out on the couch reading. And would just, like, every 20 minutes be like, is this over yet? What are you doing? Like,
seriously, go into multiplayer with like, me or
with
someone.
With the battle buddy.
Yeah.
Hey, little buddy.
And like, I'm confident that you'll see the difference and be like, okay, wow, this is it's so,
I'm sure
it's so different.
It looks cool. I really want to get into it.
Here are things that they'll probably learn from those. One, to make missions shorter, you know, in campaigns, because they last forever. They might take you like an hour just to do one, and then what happens when you're done? You just do it all over again. So, I mean, these are some of the things that they're trying to work on. And another thing is, like, you know, when I was saying that there are fewer units to deal with, the good side of it is that there are more options for these units. So instead of, like, just saying, I can make a move here, I can make them shoot, then you really can focus on the micro. And the micro doesn't really feel like micro in the negative sense with StarCraft or something, because you don't have the big picture to worry about. I mean, you actually want these options. They're sort of empowering, and they make you feel like, kind of like, you know, like when we have like good tank battles in Company Heroes Online, we will say I charge in with tanks and I'll come in at different angles that way. And the reason I'll do that is because if they happen to have an AT gun camouflage somewhere and it starts firing on one, chances are it's not going to be able, it's going to have to do an about face to hit the other. Then I can pull that tank behind it and attack it. Or conversely, if it's hitting me so hard with like armor-piercing shells, instead of just clicking, we'll go back here to my base and hope, cross my fingers, that it gets back to a repair station before it gets blown up. Instead of just doing that, I'll I'll order it in small increments to back up, never expose its rear to the AT fire, you know.
Yeah.
And then I'll move that back, and then as soon as it turns around to attack the tank that's then behind it, then I can crouch, then I can like inch it back in and take it out that way. And so those kind of things are like really fun. I mean, it might not sound, I don't know if this sounds like even remotely interesting or fun to you, but yeah. Like I find that like really rewarding when you, especially against human opponents, and you're like,
the game always sounds like just a huge collection of like interesting moments that if you know what you're doing, you can be surprised by them.
Yeah.
You know, always surprised by something cool and, that happens.
And the sense of like legitimately overcoming long odds.
Yeah.
I think is pretty.
Let's not get too far off the Dawn of War.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Yeah.
Okay. So that about wraps up. Yeah. We're going to go on to GFW Radio that you have already heard.
Whoa.
So the Lost Island time loop.
If it sounds like the meandering has already begun. Yeah.
Okay. And we out.